That bloody hurt. All right. I shook my nut, ducking towards the door. Susan rose up, however, chucking off her blanket. She waved at both of us in disgust.
Are you both fair touched? Light saved me. That's twice now, and you?
Susan stabbed her finger at you.
Love him.
You flushed, turning away from me. I wished I could see your expression.
Stop being such a mongy bitch. Who stayed up with you when you fair cried your eyes out over him? Why hide it? Look.
Susan marched to the door of her room, pausing in the frame.
I'll pack and go stay with a friend in Manchester. You two sort it out.
Then Susan disappeared inside, slamming the door, and we were left alone. I was more frightened in that moment than when I'd been on the burning ship with the stink of roasting flesh and Kira's brawny arm around my throat. Have you ever understood what you do to me? You could flay me with a look. We circled each other like two lions sussing each other out, not knowing if the other would attack. At last you shrugged.
This is what it's all been about. Advance. Why, you...
I never wanted to...
Shut your gob.
In 1863, Lawrence, Kansas was home to some of the most heated debates and feelings about abolitionist and free state movements. Most people living in the growing city were opposed to slavery being allowed, and the most fervent among them were commonly referred to as jayhawkers. Within the ranks of those calling themselves thusly were some radical men willing to carry their beliefs beyond discussion. Red legs was the term applied to those members of militias who carried out raids in Missouri against any who opposed their way of thinking. This nickname, which they and others applied to them, reflected the distinctive red leggings they wore over the lower portions of their trouser legs.
Then she morphs into a fly and makes a beeline for Taser, hitting him with such force that he smacks his head against a stair tread and lands in a crumpled heap. But before he can rise, Cammy is on him like a winged whirlwind, landing blow after blow until Taser's eyes go white and he's down for the count. It's over.
Impressive, came a nasally voice. But you're still going to die.
I spin to find a small man stepping out of the shadows. He's got an egg-shaped head, dark glasses, and wears a doctor's coat over his green surgical scrubs. It's Dr. Demento. He's a Meta 1 psychic, which means that he's about to throw a royal mind-bender our way. There's no time to react. I brace myself when suddenly Dr. Demento is slammed from behind with incredible force. He flies forwards, hitting his head against the underside of the stairwell and falling to the ground unconscious. Just then, Doggone appears in front of me, his tail wagging.
Never in our wildest dreams did we imagine it could happen to us. We, the mighty, felt confident in our national security. The idea that the United States could possibly lose a nuclear war was considered not only unlikely, but pure fantasy. When the bombs fell on that cold October morning, fantasy became reality. Our enemies, having grown tired of our endless meddling in the affairs of tiny third world nations, carved their maxim into our collective spirit with the ink of nuclear fire. Yankees, go home.
He could not, under any circumstances whatsoever, attempt to force the issue. That way lay absolute disaster. So after a few quick taps on the tablet, he tucked it between his arm and chest and briskly walked toward the front desk. Stepping around behind the desk's back wall, where a passageway lay hidden from view, the manager quickly made his way up a flight of stairs that led to his office. The potential of the newly arrived Mr. Childress, notwithstanding, there was still plenty of work for him to do. But even as he sat down at his desk, he found himself fighting down a very strong urge to get right back up out of his chair, march straight for room 4264, and, as the old saying in these parts went, lay all his cards on the table. Consequences be damned.